Hello, and welcome to the Radical Thoughts Podcast. This is our first bonus episode of Season 2, so we're releasing the entire conversation for free to all our listeners. In this episode, I talk with Phil O'Brien, member of the Raymond Williams Society and editor of the journal Keywords. He is also editor of the upcoming collection of Raymond Williams essays, Culture and Politics, from Verso Books. Right now you're listening to 22 Ghosts 3, but in a second, you'll be listening to us discuss Raymond Williams' theory of modernism, his interaction between the local and the international, and the impact of his work around the world. Phil O'Brien is the author of The Working Class and 21st Century British Fiction from Routledge, 2020. He is editor of the up-and-coming Culture and Politics collection of writings by Raymond Williams. He is secretary for the Raymond Williams Society, and he is editor for the journal Keywords. He's come on to the podcast today to help us discuss a little bit more of Raymond Williams' legacy and some of the work that he's been doing with the Raymond Williams Society, the Raymond Williams Foundation, and the Explainers Project for the Raymond Williams Centenary. So thank you very much for coming on, Phil.
No problem. Thank you.
So to start off, kind of to begin at the beginning, as it were, the most obvious question, what really got you involved in working so much with the legacy of Raymond Williams? As I said, you're on the editorial board for Keywords. That's a journal that's very much comes out of Raymond Williams' work. You're with the Raymond Williams Society. And right now you've been doing a lot of work with archived material, both with lectures and interviews with people who knew Williams. And now you're, as I said, you're releasing a book that has some previously unavailable material that he wrote. So what really connected you to his legacy and made it resonate with you and got you involved in all these projects?
Well, it's quite a difficult question to answer, but it's a useful one to think back and try and trace it back to my interest and engagement with Williams. I suppose reading Williams as a graduate student, I did a master's at the University of Salford and did a seminar where we read the base and superstructure essay. But it kind of that's my first real engagement and kind of the point, I guess, which leads up to where I am now working on Williams. But before that, I did an Open University degree on English literature. I don't know if you'd be familiar with the Open University, but it's an institution in the UK, which is kind of a distance learning type university, or there are some residential courses as well. And it was kind of doing reading for a literature degree with the Open University, and there's a very kind of Williams approach that we took to reading literature with kind of sociological aspects to reading a lot of the work that Williams also wrote on, so Dickens and the novels of the 1840s. And I became interested in working class literature, I suppose, specifically through studying literature with the Open University and reading Graphic Gibbon and Emile Zola, and starting to kind of read more around Marxist literary theory. I don't remember specific moments when we engaged directly with Williams, but I guess he was always kind of there through reading literature in that way, and the relationship between literature and society. And I specialised in Marxist. You could pick like a theory at the end. You could pick a theory to specialise in. So I wrote my dissertation on Marxist literary theory and on Brecht and Barthes. And all my interests were around kind of working class literature, socialism, cultural studies, debates within Marxist cultural theory. And I guess all that led me to Williams. And Williams began to allow me to answer some of the questions that I had the kind of interest in Marxist literary theory, but also resistance to some of the kind of maybe the what you could think of as mechanical Marxist readings of culture. I was kind of led to Williams, which answered some of the and his work allowed me to answer some of the problems that I myself was grappling with. And then I did a PhD on working class writing, and then published a book on working class writing as well. And Williams was a key influence in that, questions of region and class and the novel, and then became secretary of the Williams Society as well, which is kind of led to the, my more recent work that I've been doing. So it's a long answer, but I guess reading Bayes' Superstructure, which allowed me to answer a lot of the questions I had prior to that and then led to more work directly engaged with Williams' theories of literature and society and the kind of reworking of Marxist cultural theory.
Thinking about your educational trajectory, I can't speak for the UK situation, but I was interested reading Williams when I started reading Williams, that my undergraduate experience, he was very different from the kinds of, you know, theorists that we would normally read. It was much more focused on this kind of post-Althusserian, post-structuralist kind of milieu. And I found him much more direct and straightforward and kind of material, I guess you could say, in his approach to culture in a way that was very refreshing to me. And I've wondered if maybe the reason he wasn't as popular in the US was partially because of his focus, even though he combines a focus on regionalism with a focus on international kind of universalist communities and things like that. And so I've been very curious about how people who are in the UK situation view the way that he sets up this relationship between local and regional cultural ties alongside his interest in global solidarity, the Marxist project, as it were, and trying to kind of, you know, change the world for a more emancipated society. Do you have any opinion on that, given your research into working class literature and the way that he kind of was involved in that, given that you're in a UK perspective, or maybe that's a little bit closer to his kind of his home and what he was looking at a lot of the time?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, this question of the relationship with Williams to the local and the global, and how widely he's read and where his audiences are. He is read, and he is read widely, and his books sold in the hundreds of thousands. But I think it's an interesting question for us now, when his centenary is approaching in August, to think about, you know, how is he read, where is he read, in what context, and maybe answer this question of why is he read not more widely. But some of the, I mean, it's difficult to generalize and come up with some of the criticisms that Williams has faced. But maybe one of the ways in which he's been marginalized, I suppose, is because he's seen to write about place, about class, about region, about community, and something seen as maybe reformist or something seen as parochial in his writing, which is very strange when you look at the trajectory of his writing. I mean, I'm hoping that this collection that I've edited will answer some of those criticisms through his own writing. So there's an essay called Future of Marxism that was published in New Left Review recently, but was first published in 1961 in the Journal of the 20th Century. And so first of all, I should say that the local and the global are intimately connected in Williams's work. But in this essay, you see that kind of international socialist perspective and that international solidarity through his work. So, for example, he talks of the peace movement and the support of colonial liberation movements being the critical fields of our contemporary socialist activity. He talks about Western society being determined by this international struggle, an international military struggle changing us deeply from the inside. So that international perspective is there throughout his work. But because he stresses the significance of place and class as well, sometimes he's been, those two connecting aspects of his work and the deep connection between the local and the global important. Sometimes that aspect of his work has been overlooked or the tendency to dismiss his writing. But his own critique of things that are deemed regional is interesting, particularly in regional, when something is described as a regional novel or regional writing, it's seen as kind of secondary or displaced from the dominant authority or the place of power. But that those are often kind of ideological and political decisions to describe one novel, for example, as regional because it's not in the centre of cultural authority. And a lot of other decisions have gone into describing something as regional to try and dismiss it, really. So if his own work is dismissed as regional, it's interesting to think about the relationships of power and who gets to speak and on what basis there. But it's interesting, I think I found in my own work in the Wayne Williams Society, I read the readership of the journal and the members are genuinely, you know, from all over. Particularly, there's a lot of we've members in the States, and then in North America, in South America, India, Turkey, Japan. So there's a broad reach of his writings, and people find kind of useful models in his work that may be based specifically on a particular idea of community or place within Britain, but then it's a way of reading history and society that is much broader, that places crucial importance on the local, but is much broader and allows you to connect to global concerns and international concerns and questions of international solidarity.
I have always been interested in how early on, not that there weren't other thinkers who were connecting with this movement at the time from, say, a Marxist or post-Marxist perspective, but the way that his combination of these themes plays into his concern for ecology and that kind of movement that is both local and global in its concerns. One of the lectures that was recently released from the archival audio was one of his lectures on ecology, and it was one of my favorites. I was sharing it all over to all the people I know. And I think, again, kind of maybe another way to look at the local global connection is, as a writer, he's very clear and straightforward. And I like that he will interact, you know, as a literary critic or as a theorist, he will interact with other figures and writers. But he's not really someone who name drops. He's not someone who's trying to, you know, show off how much he knows about all these heady concepts and things like that, like you get with some academic writers. He's usually very, very succinct about how he's trying to interact with people and correspond with them. And that's one of the things that's kind of interested me with maybe some of the writings that might be coming up in your edited volume too, is I'm curious to see who we'll see him interacting with that we haven't seen in the public writings before. One of my co-hosts was saying that he saw that there's a Bourdieu connection essay in there, which we're all fans of him too. So we were excited about that. And I guess as someone who's been doing a lot of this archival work and also released, you know, this collection of interviews, do you think that kind of network that he built with other writers and thinkers is very central to his project? How do you see that kind of network of figures that he was interacting with, maybe sometimes critically, other times, you know, with Thompson and Hall, that was a very direct kind of collaboration on certain projects. Do you see that as maybe being one of the ways that he was putting things into, you know, we might use the fancy term like praxis or something like that?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot to say. There's a lot to say in response to that, really. So I'll try and pick me up on anything I don't cover there. But to begin with, Bourdieu, there's an essay in the collection called Pierre Bourdieu and the Sociology of Culture, which is written with Nicholas Garnham and published in 1980. So this is one of the essays that is already available, but as far as I'm aware, has never been collected before in a Williams collection. So yeah, I've done some work around that, and it's definitely the first introduction in English of Bourdieu's classic work Distinction, and it's working on some early translations of Distinction before it's published. In the UK, I think published a few years later, maybe 83, 84. But yeah, there's an interesting story. I find it interesting story that I try and tell in the introduction to the collection, where E.P. Thompson is a long-term friend and collaborator with Williams, as was Stuart Hall. And often Williams is the kind of go-between and the person who tries to, who negotiates between fallings out between these different sections of the left. And he's, I don't know if he's one person who stays friendly with Thompson throughout his life, whereas others have numerous different, sometimes quite public fallings out with Thompson. But E.P. Thompson goes to Paris, I think it's about 1975, and works with Bourdieu, or meets Bourdieu, and then comes back to England and is very excited for Williams to meet Bourdieu and work and read Bourdieu. So reading between the lines, Thompson convinces Williams to go to Paris. And Williams goes to Paris in 1976, run some classes on Thomas Hardy, and I think does a seminar with Bourdieu as well. I think it's at the invitation of Bourdieu he goes to Paris, and that starts a kind of collaboration that I think really only ends because of Williams's relatively early death. I think if even when Williams died in 88, there was some discussions and between Williams and Bourdieu, and Bourdieu wanted to Williams to contribute to some work he was something he was working on. But I've read some of the letters in the archive between the two, and I think they both felt kind of isolated in some ways in the work they were doing, particularly from sociological perspectives, and felt like there was a meeting of minds to some extent of the approaches they were taking to the reading of culture and popular culture. Particularly, Bourdieu talks about this kind of remark. He finds it remarkable the work that the ways that they think and approach popular culture and analysis of popular culture in a similar way. So there's something really fascinating about that, about the connection between the two. And then this essay, like I said, is in the edited collection, is in kind of introduction and a long analysis of Bourdieu's work up to that point, up to 1980. It's led by Nicholas Garnham primarily, and Williams is the co-author of the piece, and they find many kind of connections and in their analysis of popular culture and the focus on a sociological perspective. I suppose what's interesting as well is the differences, and what you could possibly identify in this essay is that Williams still retained a more hopeful sense of popular culture and social change than Bourdieu did, or that's what Williams and Garnham kind of argue in the piece. So that is one connection to one of these other figures, but there's numerous ones that come out in a lot of Williams's writing. His life, where he often, I think he often felt kind of isolated at certain moments. So after the war, when he was working as an adult education tutor, he'd left the Communist Party, and this was before 1956. He was working on culture and society, was isolated geographically because of where he was working in Sussex and away from the university. And he finds people like Stuart Hall in the late 50s and Thompson as well, and then Richard Hoggart. They're all kind of working independently, and then they find each other and start working together on culture and new questions of culture. And you see that happening at different points, these kind of people who seemingly feel that they're working in isolated pockets on different questions, and then coming together. And then you get these great collaborations around the new, you know, the new left, particularly in the late 50s, the first new left, and then working, throughout his career, people like Bourdieu and Lucien Goldman, I suppose, and others as well.
I'll use that to jump onto a question that's kind of come to mind from our discussion that isn't exactly in the notes that I sent you, but I know that you mentioned earlier on about engaging with this work and how Williams stands out as someone who was trying to produce a less mechanistic or dismissive approach to culture in a tradition that, you know, whether it is, it shows great fealty to what Marx intended or what have you, the Marxist tradition up to that point had kind of stultified in a sense in terms of its approach to culture. It wasn't known for having a very dynamic reading of popular culture and how working class culture actually interacted with society. And in the work that we read for our explainer, Politics of Modernity, there's an essay, I can't remember the title, where he kind of talks about this sort of cycle or process of going into institutions to try and change the popular readings of things to kind of create a new syllabus. But when you create a new syllabus, you kind of become institutionalized. And so certain members of the initial project leave and they kind of become more scattered, but they also become more connected to kind of direct interactions with the communities that they were trying to theorize and talk about from the start. From your perspective today, there isn't exactly what I would imagine to call like a huge Marxist current or something to be changed in its perception of culture. It's not the biggest political movement of our time. How do you see that this view of culture having a significant impact in a world where maybe the default view for many people isn't going to be a schematic based and superstructure kind of approach, but it still seems to be enlightening and enlivening for what most people maybe assume that culture is.
Well, I think the collection that I've edited includes what was titled Marxist Cultural Theory, and that is actually the Base and Superstructure essay. It's the recording of that essay that then Williams kind of transcribes and edits and publishes as Base and Superstructure in 73. So what I've done is transcribe the original recording and publishing that for the first time. And I think that's crucial. There's only slight differences to what is later published in New Left Review and in the other collection you've read on your podcast, Culture and Materialism. But it's really important essay because it's fundamental to an understanding of what Williams' specific approach to culture is within Marxist cultural theory, and it the kind of questions that he tackles as an undergraduate, and then he kind of comes back to rework Marxism within the 70s due to an engagement with, and he's really kind of excited by the opening up of debates within Marxist literary theory in the 70s, provoked by kind of Althusser and then readings of Gramsci and new translations of Walter Benjamin and others. So he's kind of that's a really important way, I think, for people who haven't read Williams to kind of read that essay and think about how he's reshaping the base and superstructure model. I think there's, even if that is still kind of seem to be suggesting that's kind of understood now as common sense that the mechanical Marxist position isn't still prevalent, I think there's still questions around how we understand what culture is, what culture does, how it's produced. So Williams still asks important questions around that. One thing I often think about is there's just a notion that culture reflects society, and I think you know it is difficult to don't want to create strong kind of general opinions, because there's a lot of complexity in the way people read culture, but I think there's still a prevalent sense in which kind of art or culture, novels, films reflect society, and Williams would be very much pressing against that, saying how culture produces society and culture comes out of society and kind of affects the way we think about society, and it's much more dynamic process involved with the production of culture, and how it's a constitutive and active and social process, culture itself. I think Williams raises lots of important questions around how we think what culture is, what it does, what a popular culture is, and how it doesn't simply reflect from a mechanical Marxist position, or maybe from a kind of liberal position, that it doesn't just simply reflect society. It has a really active social role.
As a cultural theorist and someone who's trying to connect that to politics, I think it's interesting to try to reflect on why, when I read him, he seems to be very cognizant of certain things that were changing in the cultural sphere. Especially again, reading Politics of Modernity, there's certain sections where he's talking about what's popularly called like the neoliberal turn or something like that. This sense that community is really breaking down, that the idea of heavy government funding to keep the traditional capitalist industrial society afloat is sort of breaking down. And there's a lot of people wondering, are they going to have steady work, and this kind of cultural pessimism that comes with that. And he's trying to interject this feeling of hope. And it seems very, very prescient even now. It's a little bit weird to me sometimes when I'm trying to encourage people who aren't, super heavy theorists or something like that to kind of check out his work, because it's like, oh, he's this cultural theorist and he's from Wales and he has this kind of, Marxian workerist approach to it. And he's writing from like the 70s up until like the 80s. And yet it seems very relevant to me. And it's a little bit weird when, you don't have people who are in some sort of big Marxist current or party who already think that it's of vital political importance to be talking about that kind of stuff. At least in the U.S., where I am, there's bringing up that kind of theory, anything that has claims to that kind of theory is impossible in certain areas. That no one will take you seriously if you bring up that someone is a work-centered capitalist skeptic. But I think if I give someone an essay about him talking about community or what we need to think about for a hopeful future, I think they find it very relevant if I don't tell them where he's coming from a political background.
I mean, put very simply, one of his kind of key points, I guess, is that the world is made and can therefore be changed, and nothing is determined. I think one way to understand his writing is he's always writing against all forms of determinism. So economic determinism, particularly technological determinism, that's, you know, is very relevant today in questions of technology and automation. That stress on the various different ways history can go, the contingencies of history. One criticism towards him is that there's a kind of idealism of his work, but he does have belief in people and the ability of people to change society, change the world, and that's the importance he places on popular culture. But he does that without downplaying the dangers and the challenges society faces to create a more democratic and decentralized society. I've recently been reading a lot of his work on television. So one thing that maybe isn't well known about him is that he wrote, I guess you could call it an early book on television. It's called Television, Technology and Cultural Form, taking television as a cultural form seriously. And there he writes about the opportunity provided by television as a new technology, but also acknowledging that decisions need to be made very quickly before kind of opportunities are lost for a truly democratic form of kind of public television. So I've been thinking, you know, what use is his writing now? And you go back, you'd think, well, you know, he's writing about television as a site of education, as a popular democracy, and a form of popular culture. But then later in life, you know, the opportunities that he's saying were present there in the early 70s, they've been overwhelmed by the centralization of power within television and within new cultural forms. So there's new challenges that have arisen and made those opportunities for change and hope even more difficult now. So we have to kind of use Williams not simply as a handbook to answer questions now. You've got to also acknowledge all the different challenges and opportunities that have been missed and the new challenges that we face, I guess. So Williams, you know, reading Williams doesn't provide all the answers, but hopefully it provides a kind of framework or certain models in which we can approach new challenges and the ways in which things have changed. The thing I found interesting, and because I know you did the explainer reading Politics of Modernism, which was really great, and I enjoyed listening to all your different podcasts on Williams. So I'd recommend listeners to listen to your discussion of cultural materialism and then the interview with Andrew Milner. And I did an explainer as well, which was a kind of podcast documentary using archive interviews with Stuart Hall and Terry Eagleton and Richard Hoggart. And in there, Williams talks about culture and society. That's his breakthrough book. And he talks about, you know, that in a way he felt then, talking kind of 20 years after it was published, that people still feel he's writing it. So people read it and then this is what he thinks on this topic. But you know, he'd moved on and he was constantly working and developing his own analysis. So reading Williams and his relevance to today, you need to approach it in a critical manner, you know, and apply pressure to it and think about, well, how does this relate to today? And I mean, in the way that you've just asked that question, I suppose, the crisis that we face today and the uses of this type of Marxist or this type of cultural theory and analysis of Marxist cultural theory. I found it useful if you just take a topic and think, right, well, so what uses does Williams have with regard to this? So you mentioned one, ecology. If you think about media as well, it would be another, popular culture. And there's a lot of work, I think, to be done around culture wars and the uses of culture within specific political discussions today, both here and in the US. So it'd be good if kind of we had that close attention to culture and analysis of the significance of culture in formulating kind of political projects, which can be often missing on the left, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely something I find inspiring in his work as someone. When I went to school, I studied media. I was a media studies graduate, and I've often been frustrated by a dichotomy of either with technological determinism, either the internet is the pure realm of pure freedom of information democracy, it's the greatest thing ever made, or it's just going to, it's on its way to just destroy civilization. People tend not to have a very clear idea when they talk about like communities on the internet. They don't tend to have a very good way of parsing what the community ties are, but how they might also be structured by the, you know, the form of the media or something like that, and how the production of the media interacts with the production of communities. These very complicated kind of abstract questions that are also at the same time very material. Williams has some, the beginnings of an approach, at least maybe, that kind of deals with those kind of issues and with culture and stuff. Definitely, I get frustrated with the kind of obsessions with cancel culture or media spectacle that happens a lot, especially when people who are interested in a left emancipatory politics get trapped in this kind of who called who what's the latest outrageous thing going on, rather than looking at how these cycles of outrage themselves are tied into these kind of processes that are much bigger than just right or wrong or have incentives from the material basis of culture itself. Looking ahead, I was really glad that we stumbled onto the Explainers Project when we did and were able to apply, because it's you know, a real project that's focused on bringing Williams to greater attention and using new technologies and new creative resources and forms to do so. I was really excited with some of the people that had very unique, you know, plans for how they were going to share their explainers on social media or through different formats and things like that. So if people are listening to this, I hope that they go and check those out. And like you were saying, there's been, I had no idea about some of the ties he had to, you know, like Latin American communities and research and things like that. And there were a couple, I think, that are about things like that in places that I had no idea his work was as big or as relevant as it was. So in terms of your own work, you know, people can check out the Explainer documentary that you did, and you have your book coming up. When is that edited volume expected to be released? It's in 2022.
Yeah. So it looks like early January 2022 at the moment. Certainly be out by then, maybe a little bit earlier, but it's scheduled for January 2022. Yeah. And it's an edited collection of unpublished and previously uncollected works. There's 10 essays. Interesting, a good introduction to those who don't know Williams, but also interesting for those who do know Williams's work well, because it covers his kind of a long period of from 1958 up to 1987, just before he died. And so it starts with the kind of his breakthrough book, Culture and Society. Although it's important to acknowledge that he wrote a lot, you know, he published a few books before that as well, and he worked a lot in adult education when he was writing Culture and Society. He wrote from university onwards, loads of interesting things you can, that have been published and made more widely available. One thing I did want to mention about it ends with the final essay is called When Was Modernism? And you read Politics of Modernism, and that begins with a essay called When Was Modernism? But that was reconstructed after Williams's death, that essay. Mm-hmm. So by someone who was in the audience, Fred Inglis, who later wrote a biography of Williams. And he used his own notes and he used some of Williams's notes to reconstruct that essay. And it was only during my work on this collection that I got a recording of that lecture. So that lecture, which I don't think anyone knew existed until now. So it's a recording of that lecture, and I've transcribed it and it'll be published for the first time in its entirety. So it's a really important intervention, and finding that was quite a moment that will be, you know, really important to some of the questions you were discussing on your podcast about modernism and Williams's analysis of modernism. Now, the Fred Inglis essay that was this kind of reconstruction gets to general strands of what Williams was saying. It's only a third of what he actually said on that day. So that would be an important addition to Williams's writing.
One of the things I was interested about is before reading Politics of Modernity, one of my favorite books on modernism was like Marshall Berman's All That Is Solid Melts Into Air, which has a kind of more, you know, also approaches from a rather humanist perspective, but it has a little bit more of a romantic tone, like, you know, modernism was really, really great. And we've kind of fallen into this postmodernism or something, and we need to bring modernism back. And I think what's interesting about Williams' project is he does a very good job at kind of laying out what the real creative, unique thing about the emergence of modernism was and its connection to these other factors in history, like urbanization, the breaking down of certain communities that caused lots of migration, new interactions with language, that kind of thing. But he doesn't really fall into saying modernism was super amazing and that's what we need to bring back, and that kind of cultural dynamism, even though he's also still trying to say that there's a lot of lessons to learn from its cultural project and its connection to society and ways of thinking about a dynamism that isn't just institutionalized or connected to market relations and constant creation that's been tied into kind of the mass society in this kind of unhealthy or way that breaks down and doesn't really produce social relations that are meaningful. It's a very interesting way of laying out this trend in modernism, though it kind of leaves a certain open-endedness to the conclusions, because he doesn't want to say we should return to the modernist project proper, but he's also not trying to be someone who celebrates the kind of anti-humanist postmodern project or something like that either. He's very critical of that kind of heralding a dynamism for itself that treats itself as autonomous from society. So I think with the contemporary situation, again, we kind of touched on his contemporary relevance, but in terms of that project of looking at modernism specifically, especially since that was his last, you know, posthumous work, where he was kind of trying to write, you know, the subtitle is Against the New Conformists, which is a bit, you know, this kind of question mark about like who exactly is the new conformists today. Have you engaged with that in your own work, that question of how he treats modernism and this being his final project, and what lessons that work might lead for us postmoderns today?
Well, yeah, I'm hoping the publication of this lecture in its entirety for the first time will add some more of our understanding of, you know, his positions on modernism and particularly the politics of modernism. But it's characteristic of Williams what he does in this essay, and what he's doing in the collection Politics of Modernism is looking at specific terms and how they're used and what they're used to describe. He looks in the essay, When Was Modernism, that's published as part of the collection, at the application of the term modern to describe certain innovations in the arts, and that describe these things as have ended. So just as they ended, this is when they're designated as being modern and modernism. And his concern, I guess, is that describing these things that are innovations and aesthetic techniques as being something in the past, and then the continued use of the modern to describe a specific historical moment, which he's concerned about. So it's not, I think his concern is the application of the term to describe something that is finished. By implication, that may suggest that we're kind of past history, we're beyond history, when what is being described by the designation of modernism to these various cultural works and arts is, you know, it's describing a technique and various innovations, when also it's describing a type of historical process and social process. So if the modern is in the past and we are now postmodern, then the implication for Williams is that, you know, we're beyond history and we're beyond his historical process. He's focusing in on the use of this term and how it's and what the dangers are in using a term that's seeming to, you know, to describe something that we are no longer part of. But he's talking specifically in this essay, I guess, about what some people may describe as high modernism, you know, the works of high modernism in American and English modernism. And I wanted to quote, if I can, from this lecture.
Yeah.
Where he says, if any of these movements And they would need different descriptions, not only within each of the arts, but between different arts, had been called, for example, as some more locally were, the abstract movement or the anti-natural movement or any of these possible descriptions, we would still be in a very straight and honest world because we would be comparing them, that method with this. The questions of value between them are endlessly open and diverse. The appropriation of modern for a selection of what have in fact been the modern processes is an act of pure ideology. So he's getting at something specific about the use of terms and then about the concern that these specific innovative techniques, as he calls them, are seen as kind of natural and the ideal human form to some extent, or a kind of naturalized. And what he wants to do continually with his work is look at the social and historical processes and look at and take a historical analysis of these, this particular movement and this creation of particular types of works of art. And he had a long interest in, in modernism, as particularly as an undergraduate, and finds great vitality in Joyce and his use of language. And Tony Pinckney, who edited that collection, Politics of Modernism, is good, is really, really good on Williams and modernism in the introduction, when he talks about Williams as kind of being drawn politically to realism as a form, but also being drawn because of its innovations to modernism. And Williams is really important on form and on form in the cultural form, but then also on form as a social and historical formation. There's specific things that he analyzes in Politics of Modernism, and it's that focus on, how we understand these movements as historical and social processes, not abstract from those processes, which hopefully comes through more forcefully in the essay, and that critique that's quite common now of modernism as seen as radical and new, but modernism is then modernist works anyway, and modernist works, talking specifically about the novel, I guess, as becoming institutionalized and kind of comfortable. And I don't know if he uses the phrase, but it's often clear what modernism is breaking from. These modernist writers are breaking from specifically, but it's not always clear what they're breaking towards. So one of the people he often engages with is T.S. Eliot, and he sees in Eliot's work a kind of recoil from the modern as well within modernism.
Right.
It's not clear what political project is being moved towards sometimes. I mean, I'm trying to speak about his writing on modernism in those specific terms, writing about the novels of that period and the questioning about when was modernism and the difficulties of placing a specific period and time frame around it.
I definitely appreciated his ability to incorporate a discussion of both the kind of, revolutionary and reactionary aspects of modernist movements. And he talks about, like, there's the avant-garde and the arrear-garde, and no one talks about that the arrear-garde is, like, that there you can be pro-city and anti-city in modernism, you can be pro-modernity and anti-modernity in modernism at the same time, but it's all tied to the social processes that are emerging that make these things, what you have to deal with, what you have to take a stance on. And that's kind of part of what's new about the movements that are occurring, is that they're encountering new things that you can't ignore. So whether they're pro or against it, that's kind of what draws in this, like, focal point of what they need to engage with.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. And the thing I was trying to stress as well was that this kind of attention to language and attention to words, not simply trying to define or give definitive answers to what this term means or what this word means or what this movement means, but looking at how they are used, what political purposes are used in certain, the way in which certain words are used. So one of his most well-known books is Keywords, which looks at, the historical changes in meaning of words and how words are used or how they're used in different ways. And that kind of close attention, that focus on historical and social process, again, comes through in that project, which, again, is something that I think is really important about Williams.
So in addition to your book that's coming out, is there any other work that you've done? I know you have an academia page, which, is a fantastic resource for finding things that aren't closed off by paywalls and absurd academic prices. And but is there anything else that you would recommend that people check out from your work, your archival research, or just resources about Raymond Williams, or books that you think, you know, if someone really doesn't know anything about this and they want to check it out, like what would your little syllabus be for the aspiring Williams researcher?
Well, as you've said, you've contributed, and this podcast has contributed to that project, hasn't it, with the explainers series. Yeah. That's actually, I'm from the Raymond Williams Society, but then there's the Raymond Williams Foundation as well, and it's the Raymond Williams Foundation that has launched these and funded and commissioned these explainers. So check out their website. But the Raymond Williams Foundation is part of the remit, I guess, is adult education, and the Raymond Williams Society is an academic society. So that kind of, and that represents two sides of Williams, two sides that Williams wouldn't want separate as well. So we try and work together. So you can look at the Raymond, listeners can look at the Raymond Williams website, and I've tried to make that into a resource, places to find out about Williams and read about Williams. There's links on the, so it's raymondwilliams.co.uk. And there's links there to the project I've done recovering Williams lectures and digitizing them and making them available on SoundCloud. So there's about six, I think, lectures now you can listen to, including the one you've mentioned, Ecology and Socialism. There's also an About Raymond Williams page on there that gives you just kind of short biographical entry on Williams, and there's a link to the podcast documentary I made. But also on there, there's a list of recommended books to read, and then a full list of all the books that he published. And then underneath that, there's a list of recommended books, you know, on Williams that people could read as well. And I think one of the challenges of Williams's work is he was truly interdisciplinary, and he continually pushed kind of the boundaries that are imposed, I guess, by academia. So his work covers lots of different subjects and topics, and tried to kind of suggest on the About Raymond Williams page on the website, if you're interested in say politics, read Resources of Hope, a collection by Verso. Interested in literary analysis, read The Country and the City. If you're interested in biography, read Politics and Letters, which was a selection of interviews with the New Left Review. So there's lots of different ways into Williams, and also listen to your podcast and the and the explainer series that is being released by the different aspects of different parts of the explainer series being released by the Raymond Williams Foundation as well. And it's his centenary year this year, as we mentioned, coming up in August. So there's lots of work around Williams that the society and the foundation will be publicising and trying to connect all this different work that's going on as well.
I'll try and put as many, you know, links when people are listening to this, so they can check the show notes and hopefully check out some of these resources. But thank you so much for agreeing to come on and talk about Raymond Williams. I'm definitely going to try and get your book when it comes out, because it sounds like it's got a lot of great stuff in it. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us for this special interview, Phil O'Brien. You can find links to his forthcoming work, as well as links to the Raymond Williams Foundation and the Raymond Williams Society, in the show notes below. If you want to hear more interviews like this, subscribe to our Patreon for just $3 a month. We try to release bonus episodes on a monthly basis to accompany our regularly scheduled book discussions. If you want to support the podcast, please consider giving us a positive review on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Our next discussion will be Antonio Negri's Political Descartes. We hope you'll tune in. Thank you, and we hope you'll join us next time.